Chapter 42. All week everyone in the office knew that something new and big was afoot in Daylight's mind. Beyond some deals of no importance, he had not been interested in anything for several months. But now he went about in an almost unbroken brown study, made unexpected and lengthy trips across the bay to Oakland, or sat at his desk silent and motionless for hours. He seemed particularly happy with what occupied his mind. At times men came in and conferred with him and with new faces and differing in type from those that usually came to see him. On Sunday Deed learned all about it. "I've been thinking a lot of our talk," he began, "and I've got an idea I'd like to give it a flutter. And I've got a proposition to make your hair stand up. It's what you call legitimate, and at the same time it's the gosh dangdest gamble a man ever went into. How about planting minutes wholesale, and making 2 minutes grow where 1 minute grew before? Oh, yes, and planting a few trees, to say several million of them. You remember the quarry I made, believe I was looking at? Well, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy these hills too, clear from here around to Berkeley, and down the other way to San Leandro. I own a lot of them already, for that matter. But mum is the word. I'll be buying a long time to come, before anything much is guessed about it, and I don't want the market to jump up out of sight. You see that hill over there? It's my hill running clear down its slopes through Piedmont, and halfway along those rolling hills into Oakland. And it's nothing to all the things I'm going to buy." He paused triumphantly. "And all to make 2 minutes grow where one grew before?" Deed queried, at the same time laughing heartily at his affectation of mystery. He stared at her fascinated. As he had such a frank, boyish way of throwing her head back when she laughed. And her teeth were an unending delight to him. Not small, yet regular and firm, without a blemish, he considered then the healthiest, whitest, prettiest teeth he had ever seen. And for months he had been comparing them with the teeth of every woman he met. It was not until her laughter was over that he was able to continue. "The ferry system between Oakland and San Francisco is the worst one-horse concern in the United States. You cross on it every day, 6 days in the week. That's say, 25 days a month, or 300 a year. How long does it take you one way? 40 minutes, if you're lucky. I'm going to put you across in 20 minutes. If that ain't making 2 minutes grow where one grew before, knock off my head with little apples. I'll save you 20 minutes each way. That's 40 minutes a day, times 300, equals 12,000 minutes a year, just for you, just for one person. Let's see. That's 200 whole hours. Suppose I save 200 hours a year for thousands of other folks, that's farming some, ain't it?" Deed could only nod breathlessly. As he had caught the contagion of his enthusiasm, though as he had no clue as to how this great time saving was to be accomplished. "Come on," he said. "Let's ride up that hill, and when I get you out on top, where you can see something, I'll talk sense." A small footpath dropped down to the dry bed of the canyon, which they crossed before they began the climb. The slope was steep, and covered with matted brush and bushes, through which the horses slipped and lunged. Bob, growing disgusted, turned back suddenly, and attempted to pass Mab. The mare was thrust sidewise into the denser bush, where she nearly fell. Recovering, she flung her weight against Bob. Both riders' legs were caught in the consequent squeeze, and, as Bob plunged ahead downhill, Deed was nearly scraped off. Daylight threw his horse onto its haunches, and at the same time dragged Deed back into the saddle. Showers of twigs and leaves fell upon them, and predicament followed predicament, until they emerged on the hilltop the worse for wear, but happy and excited. Here no trees obstructed the view. The particular hill on which they were, outjutted from the regular line of the range, so that the sweep of their vision extended over 3/4 of the circle. Below, on the flat land bordering the bay, lay Oakland, and across the bay was San Francisco. Between the two cities they could see the white ferry boats on the water. Around to their right was Berkeley, and to their left the scattered villages between Oakland and San Leandro. Directly in the foreground was Piedmont, with its desultory dwellings and patches of farming land, and from Piedmont the land rolled down in successive waves upon Oakland. "Look at it," said Daylight, extending his arm in a sweeping gesture. 100,000 people there, and no reason there shouldn't be 500,000. There's the chance to make 5 people grow where one grows now. Here's the scheme in a nutshell. Why don't more people live in Oakland? No good service with San Francisco, and, besides, Oakland is asleep. It's a whole lot better place to live in than San Francisco. Now, suppose I buy in all the street railways of Oakland, Berkeley, Alameda, San Leandro, and the rest, bring them under one head with a competent management? Suppose I cut the time to San Francisco one half, by building a big pier out there almost to Goat Island, and establishing a ferry system with modern up-to-date boats? Why, folks will want to live over on this side. Very good. They'll need land on which to build. So, first I buy up the land. But the land's cheap now. Why? Because it's in the country, no electric roads, no quick communication, nobody guessing that the electric roads are coming. I'll build the roads. That will make the land jump up. Then I'll sell the land as fast as the folks will want to buy, because of the improved ferry system and transportation facilities. You see, I give the value to the land by building the roads. Then I sell the land, and get that value back, and after that, there's the roads, all carrying folks back and forth, and earning big money. Can't lose. And there's all sorts of millions in it. I'm going to get my hands on some of that waterfront and the tide lands. Take between where I'm going to build my pier and the old pier. It's shallow water. I can fill, and dredge and put in a system of docks that will handle hundreds of ships. San Francisco's waterfront is congested. No more room for ships. With hundreds of ships loading and unloading on this side right into the freight cars of 3 big railroads, factories will start up over here instead of crossing to San Francisco. That means factory sites. That means me buying in the factory sites, before anybody guesses the cat is going to jump, much less, which way. Factories mean tens of thousands of working men and their families. That means more houses and more land, and that means me, for I'll be there to sell them the land. And tens of thousands of families means tens of thousands of nickels every day for my electric cars. The growing population will mean more stores, more banks, more everything. And that'll mean me, for I'll be right there with business property as well as home property. What do you think of it? Therefore she could answer, he was off again, his mind's eye filled with this new city of his dream which he builded on the Alameda Hills by the gateway to the Orient. Do you know I've been looking it up, the Firth of Clyde, where all the steel ships are built, isn't half as wide as Oakland Creek down there, where all those old hulks lie. Why ain't it a Firth of Clyde? Because the Oakland City Council spends its time debating about prunes and raisins. What is needed is somebody to see things, and, after that, organization. That's me. I didn't make offer for nothing. And once things begin to hum, outside capital will pour in. All I do is start it going. Gentlemen, apostrophe I say, here's all the natural advantages for a great metropolis. God Almighty put them advantages here, and he put me here to see them. Do you want to land your tea and silk from Asia, and ship it straight east? Here's the docks for your steamers, and here's the railroads. Do you want factories from which you can ship direct by land or water? Here's the site, and here's the modern, up-to-date city, with the latest improvements for yourselves and your workmen, to live in. Apostrophe, then there's the water. I'll come pretty close to owning the watershed. Why not the waterworks too? There's 2 water companies in Oakland now, fighting like cats and dogs and both about broke. What a metropolis needs is a good water system. They can't give it. They're stuck in the muds. I'll gobble them up and deliver the right article to the city. There's money there, too, money everywhere. Everything works in with everything else. Each improvement makes the value of everything else pump up. It's people that are behind the value. The bigger the crowd that herds in one place, the more valuable is the real estate. And this is the very place for a crowd to herd. Look at it. Just look at it. You could never find a finer site for a great city. All it needs is the herd, and I'll stampede a couple of 100,000 people in here in 2 years. And what's more, it won't be one of these wildcat land booms. It will be legitimate. 20 years from now, there'll be a million people on this side of the bay. Another thing is hotels. There isn't a decent one in the town. I'll build a couple of up-to-date ones that'll make them sit up and take notice. I won't care if they don't pay for years. Their effect will more than give me my money back out of the other holdings. And, oh, yes, I'm going to plant eucalyptus, millions of them, on these hills. But how are you going to do it? Deed asked. You haven't enough money for all that you've planned. I've 30 million, and if I need more I can borrow on the land and other things. Interest on mortgages won't anywhere near eat up the increase in land values, and I'll be selling land right along. In the weeks that followed, Daylight was a busy man. He spent most of his time in Oakland, rarely coming to the office. He planned to move the office to Oakland, but, as he told Deed, the secret preliminary campaign of buying had to be put through first. Sunday by Sunday, now from this hilltop and now from that, they looked down upon the city and its farming suburbs, and he pointed out to her his latest acquisitions. At first it was patches and sections of land here and there, but as the weeks passed it was the unknown portions that became rare, until at last they stood as islands surrounded by Daylight's land. It meant quick work on a colossal scale, for Oakland and the adjacent country was not slow to feel the tremendous buying. But Daylight had the ready cash, and it had always been his policy to strike quickly. Before the others could get the warning of the boom, he quietly accomplished many things. At the same time that his agents were purchasing corner lots and entire blocks in the heart of the business section and the wastelands for factory sites, Day was rushing franchises through the city council, capturing the two exhausted water companies and the 8 or 9 independent street railways, and getting his grip on the Oakland Creek and the Bay Tidelands for his dock system. The Tidelands had been in litigation for years, and he took the bull by the horns, buying out the private owners, and at the same time leasing from the city fathers. By the time that Oakland was aroused by this unprecedented activity in every direction, and was questioning excitedly the meaning of it, Daylight secretly bought the chief Republican newspaper and the chief Democratic organ, and moved boldly into his new offices. Of necessity, they were on a large scale, occupying 4 floors of the only modern office building in the town, the only building that wouldn't have to be torn down later on, as Daylight put it. There was department after department, a score of them, and hundreds of clerks and stenographers. As he told Deed Colon, I've got more companies than you can shake a stick at. There's the Alameda and Contra Costa Land Syndicate, the Consolidated Street Railways, the Yerba Buena Ferry Company, the United Water Company, the Piedmont Realty Company, the Fairview and Portola Hotel Company, and half a dozen more that I've got to refer to a notebook to remember. There's the Piedmont Laundry Farm and Redwood Consolidated Quarries. Starting in with our quarry, I just kept a-going till I got them all. And there's the shipbuilding company I ain't got a name for yet. Seeing as I had to have ferry boats, I decided to build them myself. They'll be done by the time the pier is ready for them. Phew! It all sure beats poker. And I've had the fun of gouging the robber gangs as well. The water company bunches are squealing yet. I sure got them where the hair was short. They were just about all in when I came along and finished them off. But why do you hate them so? Dean asked. Because they're such cowardly skunks. But you play the same game they do.
Yes,
but not in the same way. Daylight regarded her thoughtfully. When I say cowardly skunks, I mean just that, cowardly skunks. They set up for a lot of gamblers, and there ain't one in a thousand of them that's got the nerve to be a gambler. They're four flushers, if you know what that means. They're a lot of little cottontail rabbits making believe they're big rip snorting timber wolves. They set out to everlastingly eat up some proposition, but at the first sign of trouble they turn tail and stampede for the brush. Look how it works. When the big fellows wanted to unload Little Copper, they sent Jakey Fallow into the New York Stock Exchange to yell out, I'll buy all or any part of Little Copper at 55, apostrophe Little Copper being at 54. And in 30 minutes them cottontails financiers, some folks call them, bid up Little Copper to 60. And an hour after that, stampeding for the brush, they were throwing Little Copper overboard at 45 and even 40. They're catspaws for the big fellows. Almost as fast as they rob the suckers, the big fellows come along and hold them up. Or else the big fellows use them in order to rob each other. That's the way the Chattanooga Coal and Iron Company was swallowed up by the trust in the last panic. The trust made that panic. It had to break a couple of big banking companies and squeeze half a dozen big fellows too, and it did it by stampeding the cottontails. The cottontails did the rest all right, and the trust gathered in Chattanooga Coal and Iron. Why, any man, with nerve and savvy, can start them cottontails jumping for the brush. I don't exactly hate them myself, but I haven't any regard for chicken-hearted four-flushers. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.